welcome to the broadcast with Amanda, Shandy, and Colleen. My name is Colleen.
My name is Amanda.
And I'm Shandy.
Welcome to the show, everybody. This is season 3, episode 35, number 125. How is it going this week?
Very good. I'm every time you say the number, I'm always like, wow, so many episodes. That's so great.
I know.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that it's our third season. Like, I think about that sometimes, and it doesn't, like, really compute.
No, no.
But, like, we have been doing this for 3 seasons. It's crazy.
Yeah. I know. I feel like I have been through a lot of shit in the last 3 years that my life is just so different than when we started this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I know that that's probably the same for you guys, too. So, just, it's crazy.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, a lot of, like, imperceptible ways, but it's, like, a lot of little tiny changes to, like, where I am today. I'm like, oh, yeah, no, it's pretty different.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. Like, I'm in a different house than when we started. I have a second child from when we started.
Yes. Yeah. See, you have you get the prize for the big ticket changes. Yeah.
That's true. I am in a different apartment, though.
True.
We're in a different apartment.
Yeah.
You had a different roommate when we first started.
Yeah, I had a different roommate. Yeah.
I have a roommate.
Yeah.
Yeah. So see, those are all big ticket items.
And Gabby was so tiny when we started. I was thinking about that this morning because I was just struck by just how massive she is. And I was thinking about when we started and she was a tiny little kitten that would sit on my lap and she's so cute. And she would, like, you know, I would be drying my underwear behind us in what is now my roommate's room recording, and she would be like, you know, crazy acrobat, little kitten, and now she's actually that's Fiona. I don't know if you can hear, but she is meowing outside my door.
Yeah. It is loud.
Yeah, she wants to snuggle. Aww.
I had bangs when we started. I don't have those anymore.
That's true, you did have bangs. Captain was much bigger than he is now.
He had the opposite trajectory.
Yeah, he was like 3 pounds heavier.
Oh my goodness.
Slim and trim.
Yeah. Crazy. I couldn't keep any of our listeners straight, and now I've met some of them in person, so I actually know who they are.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Speaking of, tonight, Jay and Jack and Jay's mom, Cindy, and the boys and I all had dinner with Fallon's husband, Daryl.
What?
Oh.
Yeah, he was in town for business, and we took him to the pit where Amanda has eaten. I don't know if Shandy, you went. Did we go there last year? Amanda's been there. It's the barbecue place next to Boxcar, the barcade. So we took him there.
Very good. Good choice.
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun. You know, it's funny because we were talking and he is actually, I have my monthly breakfast tomorrow morning. Don't worry. Breakfast has been ordered for everyone. in the morning. And I was, you know, he was saying some of the places because he works in education. He's like, yeah, and tomorrow I'm going to be at Duke and I'm going to be at UNC Chapel Hill and I'm going to be at this other school. I'm going to be at Campbell Law. And I was like, I am too. When are you going? Because I'm going to be there at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. He was like, okay, well, I'm not going to be there at 7. I was like,
oh,
all right.
Well. I was like, oh, it's a bummer. You're going to miss out on a pretty sweet Panera tray.
Yeah, true. I was like, they have new pastries and they're amazing. I really like their new pastries.
What kind of pastries?
They used to have, like, you know, the Danishes and stuff. Now they've, like, kind of switched it up where they've got, like, these muffin, like, Danishes. It's like the same, like, Danish principle, but they're, like, in muffin form. So it's like muffins with, like, the fruit on top and, like, the stuff inside. And
that sounds very yummy.
I will Instagram. I Instagrammed it last month, I think, but I will Instagram it again tomorrow morning, which I know will be 3 days ago for all of you people. So if you happen to catch it, that's fine. I did it. It was because I promised it to my girls. But I felt bad because when I first got there, I was kind of in not a sour mood, but I had a kind of a bad day. A bad 2 days, rather. Well, an unexpected 2 days. And I was kind of just somewhat stressed out when we first got there. So I was kind of, I felt like I wasn't like really me at first. And then I had a beer and then I was me. And so I feel like I will now I'm going to explain it because we're just going to go right into this.
Let's do it.
So yesterday morning I went to, and this is a callback to, there's two things I want to talk about in this episode, and they are both callbacks to a previous episode from last year, 2.35 from April 6th, I'm Not Eating That, which I do believe might be one of my top two favorite episodes that we have ever done. And in case anybody is wondering, the title came from that really gross voicemail in, well, it was our very first video that we ever did.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That was fun.
That was fun. I love that episode. I talk about my mail truck catching fire. I asked listeners for an advice for about something, and here. Okay, so yesterday morning, I had my just regular yearly checkup at the OBGYN, and I get there at 8:30. It's an 8:40 appointment. You know, I do my vitals. I'm sitting in the exam room at 8:38, so it's not even 8:40 yet, and I wait, and I'm waiting, and I'm waiting, and it's like 9:20, and I hear the doctor in the room next to me, and I'm like, oh, great, here she comes. Like, you know, she must be me next. And then I don't hear her anymore, and then it's 9:40, and I'm like, I have been in here for a freaking hour. Like, what is going on?
Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Finally, my doctor's like that.
See,
what?
So mine, I usually see another doctor, and it is never like that. Like my 8:40 appointment, the doctor that I generally see, I would have been out of there by 9 o'clock, maybe 9:05.
Like, well, and like if they're running behind, that's one thing. But why take you in and make you wait, like basically like naked?
Well, I was actually naked with the...
with no, like, reading material or anything. Right.
Thankfully, I had my phone. But, like, yeah, so I was completely naked except for, like, the thing that opens in the front and then the thing that goes across your lap, right? Because it was my yearly exam. And I had an abnormal pap smear last year, so I've got to do the pap smear every year now. Like, I had one glorious period where I got to get it every... I got three, you know, to go the three-year period. And I'm oh, for the rest of my life, I'm going to have to do it every year. So... you know, at this point, I'm kind of like getting like antsy. Finally, at like 10 o'clock or a little before 10, I poke my head out. So I'm trying to hold, like, keep
right,
it so
keep
that
yourself
like, my boobs aren't like poking out. And that my, because I had to hold both because they're not connected. So like I'm trying to hold the door open with my elbow and like go out there with the like thing so my boobs aren't out and my vag isn't showing. And then stick my head out, and I'm like, excuse me? I just wanted to make sure nobody forgot, like, didn't forget about me. So, and then they said, oh, you know, she had to go over to the hospital, and, because she's, I guess.
Right,
she's,
but, like, nobody was out
to tell you
that. Exactly, and that was my thing. Like, I love her. She delivered Alex. I think she's great. That's why I agreed to see her for my yearly checkup instead of the woman that I usually see. I was like, okay, but why didn't anybody tell me? Like, Dr.
She got called away, emergency at the hospital.
Exactly. Like, I had heard
please, like, please stop feeling like you need to sit here with the fucking gowns that open in the front. Like, we're sorry.
Exactly. Well, it was like, it's a half gown, like a half thing, and then just the thing on it goes on your lap.
It's bare. It's a paper robe.
Yeah. It was a paper fucking club shirt. So.
Yeah. Oh, yours doesn't go all the way? Like, mine?
Nuh-uh. It goes,
I feel like they go down to, like, my knees.
Nope. Mine,
I feel like that's a really good... it's a really good way to save a little bit of like the material, you know, the paper or whatever it's made out of. But then don't make people wait for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Right.
Mine goes down to
your
hips.
You're sitting there in your paper bolero.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Mine literally goes down to your hips. And then you have to just put the like blanket version one on top of like your crotch area.
So I know in France, they don't have that cover up. You just, it's like.
You're just there.
Sit there naked. You know,
you're just there.
Well, hope it's not a cold day.
So I'm sitting there. I'm getting anxious because I really feel like I need to get to work at a reasonable time. Yeah. And they're like, she's going to be another 20 minutes. Do you want somebody else? And I was like, yeah, can I have somebody else? So about 5 minutes later, somebody else comes to the room and it's my doctor actually who I usually see. And she's like, I hope you don't mind. I was like, oh my God, no, I love you. Like, you know, I don't care. Stick your hands up my vagina. I don't care. Let's do this. So like scratch away. She was great. She feels my boobs and she's like, "Are you still nursing? Because your boobs are all veiny like those nursing nursing boobs." And I was like, "Thank you very much. I'm only nursing one time a day still." Then she does the pap smear and she's like feeling around and she's like, "So you have an IUD, right? Because I got the Marina in last summer." And I was like, "I do." She goes, "Okay." Feeling around. She's like, "Dr. T cut the strings really short." And I was like, "I don't know. Like, she cut the strings, but I don't know how short she cut them." She's like, "Okay." She goes, "Is there anything like special about this?" And I was like, "I don't know. Look at my chart. Like, I have no idea." So she feels around some more and she goes, "So I can't feel the strings. I think we're going to have to do an ultrasound." So they bring in the wand, which have either of you ever had to have the ultrasound via wand?
No,
I've never had an ultrasound.
Okay.
Knock on wood.
She's looking around. She's like, "I don't see it anywhere. It should be here." You know, she's looking around. And then she goes, "Oh, but your uterus is beautiful." And I was like, "Oh, thank you so much. You've never had it like this in its natural habitat." So she's like, "Okay, well, we're going to have to do some pregnancy tests because it's not here. And we're going to have to send you to get an x-ray." So thankfully, all the pregnancy tests were negative. So at this point, I'm like, "All right, well, I'm going to go at the end of the day," because the x-ray place, the radiology place she sent me actually has an office that's right by the boys' school. So I was like, "Well, I've been out of work for, it's like, you know, I'm 2 hours late at this point. Let me just, I'll go at the end of the day." So, and I'll just explain to everybody in the office. I'm like, it's me. I'm going to tell them exactly why I've got to leave early. You know, so I go into work and I'm like, "So my IUD is missing."
Missing in action.
Missing in action. So I go to the radiology place. I get the x-ray. And you know where that motherfucker is? It is.
Oh, God.
It is above my spleen. It is by my ribs. It's not in my ribs.
What? But like, how does it get there?
So it must
a uterus
have.
Doesn't go up that high, yo.
It sure doesn't. It perforated through my uterus and migrated up. Now
that's gotta be not great for your insides.
Well, here's the thing. So about a month and a half ago, that same week that I was like depressed and I had some really bad stomach problems. I just assumed I had a virus, right? Like, and that was one of the catalysts, that and feeling down, that I was like, "Okay, well, I'm just not going to drink for a little while." And it kind of went away. And then about a week ago, I just started with horrible stomach pains going across the top of my stomach. Like, that I actually last Thursday or Friday Googled stomach pains and early signs of stomach cancer. Cause I was like concerned that I had something. Like, I literally Googled, like, "Do I have some kind of cancer?" Because like I couldn't eat a couple of days. I told him at work, I was like, "It doesn't feel like gas because I don't have gas. It just hurts. But I came to the conclusion, because it was actually particularly bad last Wednesday, and I drank the two Wednesdays in a row, and, you know, I drink when we podcast. So I thought, okay, well, you know, I haven't been drinking a lot. I've been eating kind of healthy, but the last 2 weeks, you know, I drank a lot on Tuesday. I didn't eat that as healthy as I usually do. So, you know, let me see if fixing my diet and then, you know, not drinking for another couple of days will do anything." And it didn't do anything. Like, it just, it still hurt to the point where, you know, 3 days later, I was Googling, "Do I have cancer?" So,
oh my God.
I put it together at that point. I was like, "Well, that has to be where this pain is coming from." Because again, like, thought that maybe it was gastritis based on the symptoms after Googling it, but I wasn't like gassy. So, they actually gave me a copy of my x-ray on a CD-ROM, which I don't have a CD-ROM drive anymore.
Right, who has that anymore?
I was like, "Who the fuck does this?" So I've got to find a CD-ROM drive. I think we have our old laptops at work from like 2014, 2013 have it. So I'm going to pull one down tomorrow and charge it up and then pull the x-ray up and then screen cap it and send it to everybody, because I looked at it. It is crazy. Like, it is clearly like an image of like right below my rib cage, and the IUD is there. So, okay. At that point, I'm like, "Oh my God, this is a story," right? But okay, it's going to be a great story, because who else has, you know, this happen between 1 and 13 women out of 1,000 have this happen to them.
Oh my God.
So this morning, they called me in the morning and had me come in and talk to me about like my options. And essentially, it was decided pretty much that they're going to go in next Tuesday. So I'm going to be a little loopy next Tuesday, maybe when we record. I'm probably going to be sober, sadly, but you're probably going to think that I'm not. But
so it's an outpatient procedure?
Yeah, so they're going to do laparoscopy or whatever it's called.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Through my belly button and search and pull it down. And I'm going to have to go under anesthesia. And she said I should be fine afterwards, but I'll just be sore because, you know, I had a little probe going up there.
Yeah, and your belly button.
Yeah, and she was like, and just so you know, they're probably going to ask for permission to go in on two different points in your abs if it's floated around and we can't find it. Like, well, but at this point, I'm still thinking it's a great story. And then they call me and they're like, so here's how much it's going to cost. And at this point, I'm thinking it's like when my lipoma got removed and it was just an outpatient procedure. I paid my special copay of whatever it was, and I was over and done with. Nope, I'm gonna meet my deductible and probably most of my out of pocket. And then I started crying.
Oh, right, but it's necessary surgery. You can't just leave it in there.
Yeah, which is
so why is your insurance then not covering it?
It'll cover it, but it won't cover it at 100% until I hit my out of pocket. So thankfully, I have pretty good insurance.
Got any other procedures you gotta get that you've been putting off getting done? I mean, if you're gonna hit your deductible this early in the year, might as well.
And that's exactly what she said, because she was like, and then my doctor was like, "So if you want to have another baby, it'll be free."
Oh my God, only in America.
I know, right?
That sucks.
But she was like, you know, everything will be, you know, at least you're covered for the rest of the year. And I'm thinking, well, what else can I get done? Can't get LASIK. Yeah. Totally would have done that. Can't get that. I have a hernia, which I might get fixed now because why not? YOLO.
Why not? Yeah. If it's it'll be free.
Yeah. I know. I'm like, what else can happen? Can I break something this year? Like, this would be the perfect time to have everything go wrong. I might get orthotics because orthotics are really fucking expensive.
They are very expensive.
Yeah, they are. So
you could take up a dangerous sport. You could take up skateboarding.
Exactly. I might do all these crazy things this year because I've got 9 months to go live it up. Yep. So,
oh my God! Again, only in America.
Yeah, I know.
So messed up.
I know. So my OBGYN though was somewhat cool in that, like, well, she came in and she goes, you know, well, the good news is you're not accidentally pregnant. I've only seen this happen once before, and the woman didn't realize it until she was 18 weeks pregnant. And, you know, we had
Jesus.
And then, you know, she explained how, you know, it probably perforated. If I want to do it again, this is what she would do. She would make sure that my anatomy was, how did she word it? She was provided a friendly environment for it because I have a slightly tilted uterus. So she goes, sometimes the way that it places once in a while, your anatomy is not friendly for it. We would put it in next time via and confirm it via 3D ultrasound to make sure it was in place. I would have several checks to make sure that it was still there. And then, you know, before I was discharged. So I would get the advanced IUD treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And I was and she goes through this thing and she apologizes. And she didn't put it in. She's still apologizing it happened to me. And I was like, I'm not mad at anybody. Like, I understand the risks of birth control in general. Like, you know, there's always a risk of side effects. Like, I don't have sepsis from it. I don't have really bad complications. Like, I'm not mad at anybody. She goes, oh, I'd be mad if I were you.
Well, I do feel like this is a ripe time to just remind the listeners about how the birth control for men was abandoned after
because of too many symptoms.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh my God.
And that was just a pill.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's what's going on with me. My IUD is currently under my ribs, in my spleen area.
Oh my God.
Which I only found out because to add insult to injury, Let me read to you, to finish this out, the report from the radiologist. Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. Now remember, they're just looking to find the IUD. Okay. Findings. IUD identified projecting over the lateral margin of the left upper quadrant, closely approximating region of the splenic flexure. Okay, cool. Number sure. two, moderately prominent stool throughout non-dilated loops of colon without evidence for obstruction correlates with signs of constipation. Nobody fucking asked them.
Butt out.
Nobody asked them to, like, x-ray me and then tell me that I'm literally full of shit. That offended me out of everything that I had
to everything I've been through today.
I was like, why you gotta point out the poop for? And I did poop last night, thank you very much.
Remedied that without having to hit your deductible.
Exactly. You know what? I'm going to get colon cleanses for the next 9 months because it's going to be motherfucking free. Because I have proof now that it's medically necessary.
Right. Man.
Oh, my God. Oh.
That is not at all what I was expecting, because when you sent us that episode last night, and I, like, of course, couldn't remember it because I can't remember anything, and I clicked on it, and I read the description, I was like, oh, shit, like, something burned down, like, something went on with the post office, the poor postal worker.
Yeah, I thought it was Ricardo, or what was his name?
Roberto.
Roberto.
Roberto, no. Like, Roberto, your house caught on fire, I don't know.
Well, Roberto won't even make eye contact with me anymore, which makes me really sad. But No. That part is actually, I might have to save for next time. This was when because I asked the listeners to give me their IUD recommendation. Like,
oh my God, that's right.
Yeah. So that was why I asked about this. And the other part was with the male part is, well, I guess actually this is somewhat quick and then I can follow up with it later. When we, Sunday afternoon, Zach and Alex and I were at home and all of a sudden there was a boom so loudly that it shook the house. And, you know, I ran outside because the last time I heard a boom that shook the house, mm-hmm. it was the fucking mail truck on fire. So, like, I ran out and I can't find it. And Zach is, like, really kind of freaking out because he's never felt aww. Something like that before. Alex is, like, happily in his high chair, like, la, 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 and Alex. I couldn't figure it out anywhere. And there was a thread on my neighborhood Facebook group and on our next door about it. It's like a huge mystery because they felt it at the state park next to us. They felt it in the neighborhoods wow. across the street. Wow. People jeez. Were summarizing that it was the quarry or there's a new school that's being like built that they were blasting there. But and I was satisfied after that. I was like, oh, that's probably what it was. But the groups that were doing the blasting for both of those came out saying that they weren't doing work on Sunday afternoon.
Jeez.
Yeah.
So then no one knows what it is. No one's
nobody
owning up to it.
Nobody knows what it was. It wasn't an earthquake or anything. Nobody's owning up to it. I mean, and it had to have been at least 5 square miles or whatever, because the park is 1.5 miles from us. And there were people in the neighborhoods that adjoin it. And somebody went and commented that they were in the park at the time. They heard it, but couldn't figure out where it was coming from. Across the street, like on the Linwood Grill side, the neighborhoods right behind that said that they heard it. It was like it, when I say it shook the house, like it felt like somebody like when we lived at our old place and they would do the quarry blasting every day, like every, you know, few days, it felt like that, but nobody is owning up to it. So
jeez, that's scary.
It's a mystery. It is. It's not that it's, I mean, Zach finds it scary. I'm convinced it's aliens. So I don't know what to say.
And that doesn't scare you? That scares me a little bit. That scares me a touch.
Well, you know,
I think a little more than nervous.
You guys see the video of Sean Hannity on air a couple of days ago at the time of this airing where there's a fly on his neck and it's like crawling up and down. And at first, like, I was like, maybe he didn't feel it because, you know, it was on his shirt. But then it goes on like the fleshy part. And it's, you know, kind of creepy. And I love the comments because the first comment that I saw was my first thought was, it's like it was wearing Edgar in a suit, like an Edgar suit.
Like an Edgar.
You guys know what that's from, right?
Men in Black, yeah.
Men in Black.
Yes, for sugar water.
Yes.
I'm excited for the new one.
Me too.
Looks pretty good, actually.
Yeah. I like Chris Hemsworth, so I'm excited.
And I like Tessa Thompson. Is that
Tessa
her name?
Tessa Thompson. Thank you.
I love her.
You know Tessa Thompson as Charlotte from Westworld.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that that fly thing first made me think of Dolores from Westworld.
Oh!
Ah!
See? It's all the same. It all comes back full circle. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the moral of the story here is Sean Hannity is either an alien or a robot.
And that poor alien. Of all the suits to pick.
Unless that alien wanted to pick that suit.
That's true. Maybe it accentuates his hips.
Maybe
you don't know.
Does.
Maybe he feels like his butt looks good in that Sean suit. We don't know. Who are we to judge?
Who are we to judge? I'm really sorry that I talked for so long. How are you guys doing?
Good. I had something happen to me yesterday that it was just like so typically like, when women complain about men, like this was like the tableau. I went out for a drink with a friend who I haven't seen for a long time, like a couple of weeks, and we were catching up, and we were like at this like sort of outside like beer garden part of the place that we were at, and there are like, you know, pretty big tables, so you could sit like six people at these tables. So we're at one end of the table and the table like empties up. So the rest of it's empty. And we're like engrossed in conversation, talking about like her breakup and like, you know, very personal things. And anyone that looked at us could see that we're just having this like one-on-one conversation. And behind us, there were some like couches kind of. And this dude had been sitting on the couch and then he like went to the bathroom or went to the bar or something and came back and somebody else had been sitting in his spot, but there are still like four other spots on the couches. Mm-hmm. And so he comes, so we're like right next to that. So he comes over to our table and is like, oh, like I got up, but somebody took my spot. Is it okay if I sit down here? Again, a little bit weird because there's literally like half the couch and two like side chairs, but like, sure, of course, like you can sit here. There's plenty of room. So we tell him that he can sit down. So he starts sitting down and he's like facing us, right? But we're facing each other because we're talking. And he like starts to tell us about how he's visiting from LA and stuff. And I'm like, oh, dude like wants to talk to us. So I'm super irritated, but in my nicest way, I just like kind of, again, I'm like, my whole body is towards my friend across the table from me, but I kind of like look over, he's on my right. Look over and I'm like, hey, so yeah, like, so we were just actually catching up, and turn back to my friend. And for me, that's like the nicest way that I can say, we don't want to talk to you. Like we're having a conversation.
Yeah. Respectful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Polite. I think. Yeah.
And it totally like goes over his head and he keeps talking and I'm like so irritated. And then my friend is like, yeah, we were actually just having like a really intimate conversation, just the two of us. And then he's like, oh, you guys just wanted to talk. And we're like, yeah, like, thanks. Sorry. Yeah. Thanks.
What? Said that.
And so then it's like really weird and he's still sitting there. And again, there's like ample room behind us, but whatever. He's still sitting there and his body is still sort of like turned towards us.
He's just listening.
And now he's just listening. And this is the worst part, because when he was still trying to make small talk with us and he mentioned that he was from LA, he was like, oh, and you said you were going to LA. Because my friend, when he was over in the couches, had like mentioned how she was going to LA in a couple of weeks.
So he was like eavesdropping.
He was eavesdropping over there, and now he's like tried to insert himself. And so he's still just like sitting there awkwardly, kind of like turned towards us. And it takes us a minute to be like, and then like, again, we're talking about like intimate things. And so finally, like the two of us, we just kind of like go back to our conversation and it's just like, well, fuck that. And finally, after like at least 15 to 20 minutes, he like finishes his drink and then gets up and leaves. And we're just like, the fuck? And actually, before that happened, she and I went back up to the bar to order. So when we're up at the bar, we're like, seriously? Like, did that just happen? Like, I felt kind of mean. And my friend's like, no, I'm glad you said that. Because like, that, like, what? Why do you assume that, like, you, that we want to talk to you when we're very obviously having a conversation, just the two of us?
Right. And I think that this is a good time to teach some people out there that might be curious as to, let's educate, why that was not okay. As Shandy just said, it was very clear that they were involved in a conversation. It wasn't like they were making little chit chat that you could come up. Like, it's like if you know two friends that are in the middle of an intimate conversation, you probably wouldn't walk in and like be like, hey, so I'm here. Let's talk about me.
Seriously. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't like, and that's the thing is like, there literally was a part of me that felt bad. And then the other part of me was like,
yeah, dude, because you're a nice person.
Right. It's like, well, but body language, like there was nothing indicate that it was safe to approach or that approaching would be welcomed.
Right. And when I said you could join our table, yeah, like, that didn't mean, and we want to talk to you. Like, because, like, for example, when my friend and I arrived, there had been, like, other people at the table at the other end. Mm-hmm. And so we also asked them, do you mind if we sit down at this part of the table? Like, that, but that didn't mean, like, and we're going to now talk to you.
Right.
And like, and, like, demand your time.
And even if he couldn't understand social cues and still said something, once you guys said the first time, hey, we're having a conversation, it's pretty obvious. I mean, you kind of spelled
it
out.
That's what I thought. Yeah. And simple. That's when I was like, oh, my God, I can't. It's very frustrating when people can't pick up on like body language, social cues. Like, I am being very clear.
Right. And it was like, again, if you can't, you still said it.
Right. Well, then just the point that then you had to do something where you felt like your morals were being compromised, that like right. you felt yeah, uncomfortable because right. you felt like you were being rude because the first attempt didn't land. It's like,
right. Right.
And I just now everyone's having a bad time.
Right. No, I wanted to tell the guy, but again, didn't want to be mean, but I wanted to tell the guy, like, honestly, my advice would be like, go inside directly to the bar. Like, that's usually where people hang out when there's a higher chance of like, you know, just like the random person who's here on vacation or here on a work trip or whatever. Like, that's the place where people that you want to go.
They want to be approached.
Exactly. You
know, this is where it comes back to, in some small measure, I kind of blame like the rom-coms that make that okay.
Totally.
Fair.
I mean, yeah. That's all part of the apparatus. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Where it's like, but like you two can get your next girlfriend from just serendipitously sitting at the same table as she does.
And interrupting her very intimate conversation with a friend.
Right. Obvious intimate conversation, yes.
It was so weird. But then anyway, so we were just like totally astounded that this happened. And I was like, well, I have something to talk about on the podcast.
I like how both of us thought this week, oh, we're having this thing happen. This is going to be great to talk about.
Yeah, yep. Man. Wish I could say the same.
That's all right. I'm sure at some point you're going to outdo us with great stories.
Exactly. I'll have a story, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although, I mean, do you want to, though? Because it means that you've had, like, a bad experience. So
that is true.
She could have a
that
super awesome experience.
So I suppose, count my blessings.
Yeah.
No, next week, Amanda could come to us and be like, so I was at the bar, and this dude wanted to sit with us. And I said, sure. And then he left me alone. It was great.
It was great.
Like you do.
Like you do.
Like, I get it. Like, so he's in town from LA. I don't know why, because I fucking didn't ask because I didn't want to talk to him. But he's here, you know, for business or for pleasure or for whatever reason, he's here by himself. He went out to a bar at like, you know, dinner-ish time. He's having a drink. Like, okay, so I don't know. Step one, bring a book. Like,
or your phone.
Like, you carry around a tiny computer with you all day long that's just there to entertain you when you're bored.
Exactly. Very true.
Or like, go to an area where it looks like people are not engrossed in their own conversation. Go at the bar, you can talk to the bartender. Like, they're literally paid to sort of provide that kind of rapport. Like,
yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then make sure you tip them.
And then make sure you, tip them. Yes. Yeah. So anyway, that was
I'm
my
sorry,
thing.
Sorry, Shani. That's frustrating.
That is frustrating.
And annoying. Above all, it's annoying.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you handled it very well. Thank you. I feel like I have to remember the terminology you ladies used so I could employ it the next time, or if that ever happens to me. Because apparently,
if you tell someone that you're catching up and point to like you and the person, apparently that doesn't work. So you have to be more direct. We're having an intimate conversation, just the two of us.
Yes. Apparently. And I think using the word intimate, I feel like can be... it can be obviously discouraging to someone who just wants to make casual conversation.
I mean, which he knew because he had been eavesdropping on our conversation, as evidenced by his comment about LA. Like, he knew all of the contents of our conversation.
Also, you never let on that you're eavesdropping.
No.
You never make that clear. That's just like a private thing that you do with your own personal ears. And no one else has to know about it.
Unless it's really good, and then you take it to Twitter.
Right, then you tell other people that are not there with you. Right. It's a your ears environmental thing. Uh-huh. And then you use your fingers and or your mouth, and you share it later with other people, not there.
Exactly.
That's how you eavesdrop.
Yeah, we should make a guide.
How you eavesdrop. Episode title.
Yep. Listening in the wild.
Listening in the wild. Write that down.
Sly listening.
Sly listening.
Sly listening. Now I like
what not to do while eavesdropping. God.
Ear shade.
So, ear shade.
Anyway.
Oh man. Yeah, so that's all I got. Did you do anything fun this weekend, Amanda?
I had a very busy weekend. I don't know if any of it is terribly like fun story, but yeah, it was a big weekend of socializing, which is probably why I'm so like tired now, because it was just like nonstop having to talk to people. Oh, yeah. Hi, buddy. Yeah, so we had some friends. Their daughter turned 1 year old, so we went. Aww. up to Washington Heights to celebrate with her. And on the way, some friends of friends are moving to China in a couple weeks.
Wow.
So they were having a going away party same day. So we're like, oh, great. We'll pop off there on the way up. They had it at like a barcade bar. So hang out, have a beer, play some Pac-Man, and then go to a baby party. So
nice.
Really fun. And then the next day we had brunch with one of Daniel's friends that's an actress that's in New York for pilot season, which I thought was interesting because you always hear pilot season and you think like LA and like...
Yeah.
Yeah. And apparently there's a very big pilot season here in New York now that so many shows shoot on location here. So she lives in LA and is here for like the spring doing that. So... we met up with her and like walked around Prospect Park. Oh, but this is kind of fun. So while we were sitting, I love how when I just like come up with a story like midstream. Let's go with it, guys. sitting at the restaurant, we were seated at the bar because the restaurant we went to for brunch was like really tiny. So we're seated at the bar and we're like facing this big bay window. And it was St. Patrick's Day. So all of a sudden, like a parade is going by this random side street.
Oh my God,
and like
amazing.
Turning onto like the main drag that the bar was on. It was like a corner spot. And like, it was a long ass parade. Like,
that's awesome.
Like, it was like a good 20 minutes. It was like, and I don't know how any other way to say this, but it was a very like small town suburbs level parade. Okay. So you had, you know, your marching band and you had every child scout troop and the police department and the fire department and I don't know, someone's dance school and the old school cars and the fire truck, like they had everything. This parade had everything.
I marched in a St. Patrick's Day parade in my local hometown when I was in junior high of some sort.
Yeah and it was nice. Like it was really fun. Just nice. Like, we're like, they're still going. They're still going.
That's great.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. That's awesome.
And then we had some friends from Marist that were in town visiting some other family. And so they were like, are you around? Like, can we swing through and like hang out? Yeah. So it was like so much talking and so much hanging out.
Aw, that's awesome.
It was something that you wanted to be doing.
It's true. Everyone was someone invited into the conversations. There were no.
Yes. No,
there
was good.
No shady eavesdroppers. It was all, all intentional conversers.
Yeah. No, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like really fun. I went geocaching with Zach this weekend.
That's fun. That's a good bonding activity.
Yeah. So I scouted them out actually on Friday. Geocaches locally that were specifically like kid friendly, where they had like treasures or toys or something, you know, in the box for kids. So we did that. Okay, so we did one on Saturday because it happened to be at the playground. That we were at, and I kind of did that like as a way to warm him up. And then on Sunday we had three of them that we were gonna do, but he got all tired after the second one. It was like, I want to go back to the car, and we had only walked 0.3 miles, but whatever.
little legs.
So exactly, but he found two treasures, which he's one of them was, you know, those little mazes where you like, you know, put the ball like and got to get it.
Yeah, I love those.
Yeah, so one of them was that, and it was like a Peter Cottontail version of it. So he actually really liked that because he's, you know, it knows Peter Cottontail from the books and school. And the second thing was a Cat in the Hat keychain.
That's so cool.
And he loves him some Cat in the Hat, so he was like so into that. And like he actually this morning he was like, can we take the keychain part off of it so I can just play with the Cat in the Hat figure? And I was like, no. So it was really fun.
So then do you just leave something else?
We did. Back when we were doing the potty training thing, if he had a day without pooping his pants, and they were infrequent for a very long time, we bought, to Jay's credit, Jay bought him a giant pack of these little itty bitty Thomas the Train mini trains. And it was like, they were very small, and it's they came in individual packages within the pack. And it's just different versions of each of the trains, right? So like collector's versions or whatever, like for 5-year-olds. Mm-hmm. So Zach, you know, opened up his fair share, and he had doubles, triples, quadruples of several of them. So before we left, we went through and we took out the ones that had multiple put them in little baggies. And I said, okay, so we're going to have to give, you know, these, you're going to take treasures that other little boys and girls left, and you're going to leave these for, you know, boys and girls that will find them in the future. So we put them in baggies. I still have a whole bunch actually in my purse because we only got through two of them.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was really cute.
A little treasure hunt.
Exactly. Well, it's like a great way to teach, like an easy way to teach sharing and donating giving.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's not a birthday. It's not Christmas. It's just like giving because it's fun.
Yeah. And you know, I thought that he was going to have a tough time with it, but he was actually okay. I think because he really liked the stuff that he got, that he's still been playing with them. And I'm glad that, you know, there are people out there that think about this, like, you know, giant worldwide game for adults, and to do ones that are aimed for kids, because the first one we found had a dragon on top of it. And it had all these like kids games inside of it. So Zach and I then for the finding the next one, we played this whole game with his imagination of where could the dragon be hiding. And there was like a down tree and we were like, oh my God, did the dragon knock that down trying to find the next treasure? So we had a really good, time with it.
Nice.
That's good.
Yeah. That's really cool.
I like it.
Yeah. I'm sorry. This first 50 minutes of this episode has just been me talking a whole lot.
Oh, we just talked too. I did forget to mention that I did my first shift as a volunteer at the Museum of Natural History.
Oh, fun! What did you do?
So, the reason that I chose this place to volunteer at is in part because they have a bunch of different things that you can do, and they're like super chill, and they treat their volunteers really well. And so, like, to sort of like ease into it, because am not an expert in natural history. I just worked at the gift shop and it's like 3-hour shifts. And basically they're like, you know, they sell more if somebody is in there. Otherwise the people like would go to the front desk with whatever right. they want to purchase. But you spend most of the time just kind of sitting there. Like sometimes people come through, you talk to them, but a lot, you have, there's a lot of downtime. So they were like, just bring a book. So it's just like 3 hours to mostly read and then make a few sales. And actually the last couple that came through, like right before my shift was ending, was a couple from France. So
awesome.
Yeah. So I got to talk to them in French and they, you know, were just there visiting. So I'm sure it was, they had like a lot of questions and stuff for me.
I am sure that the last thing they expected to visit yes. Honoré was yes. to talk to somebody in the museum's gift shop.
Well, because they were like looking around in the gift shop and I eavesdropped in the not creepy way because we were just in the same little room.
Right.
And I heard them. And so I said to them like, oh, are you French? And so then we started talking and they were explaining, you know, their trip and everything. But they said they were like, oh, it's a good thing we weren't saying anything bad.
It's like, oh, this museum sucks.
Or like, I don't know, like Frank and I will sometimes say like, just like inappropriate, like you get comfortable, a little too comfortable. And like, sometimes I'll say things in a more public setting that I wouldn't say if I was saying it in English.
Right, joke
with each other in a certain way. Like it might be a little risque or just inappropriate. And then you're like, oh shit. Like the people at the table next to us are French and just heard me talking about like how we're, I don't know, had sex this morning or something, you know, like
that kind of thing.
But they were not talking about anything like that.
Oh, bummer.
Bad.
Yeah. Maybe next time we'll see.
Gosh, how do I transition into talking about leaving Neverland now?
I think we just have to take a hard turn.
All right. Let's just, we'll just take that hard turn. And now we're going to start talking about Finding Neverland, I guess.
No, not Finding Neverland.
Oh, shit. Leaving Neverland.
I mean, we could talk about that. I mean, that's kind of not what we built this episode to be, but...
So Johnny Depp, man, before we knew he was all sorts of trouble. But okay, so Leaving Neverland, how do we start?
Well, we got some feedback about it. So do we want to read the feedback and then like use that as a springboard?
Yeah, I think we could do that. Let's just kick it off with some feedback. And for the first time in a very long time, my notes are 2 pages because I took a lot of notes watching Finding Neverland.
Good for you. Leaving Neverland. I didn't take any notes, which is probably going to be problematic when we come to really discuss it.
Don't worry, because as I was watching it, like there wasn't anything that I had forgotten.
No, I was going to say, like, I didn't take notes either, but it's pretty seared in my memory.
So, okay, so emails then, yeah?
Yes.
Okay, so our first email is from JP, and ironically, as of today that we're recording, which is a Tuesday, it is JP's birthday. So happy birthday, JP. So JP says, I wanted to write in and give you my thoughts. There are 2 points I think are worth discussing. One, first of all, I believe the claims. I feel one item people fail to touch upon is MJ was arrested and went through the process, similar to those who are wrongfully convicted and released years later. The fact that we had MJ, he was in court. If all these claims were true, I feel this is a great example of our imperfect system. Again, assuming he did it, the system, which should work, should have found him guilty of these crimes. However, he was able to walk out a free man. Item number 2. I hear how many people question or blame the parents. I'm sure his influence and appeal as a celebrity allowed him to also manipulate the parents into a feeling of trust. He would work his way into the family to the point where he was a part of that family. This allowed him to gain the trust and distance himself as being viewed as a stranger. We do this all the time with our kids and members of our family. I'm sure those of us with kids wouldn't hesitate to let them spend the night at an uncle or aunt so-and-so. By no means am I defending the parents, though, as I also ask, where was the one adult in MJ staff who would have stepped forward and said, hey, why not let the kids sleep in a different room? JP.
The first point with he got away with it, I think it was just money. Like, and the fact that everybody wanted, like, they wanted him to not be guilty.
I think it's money, and I think it it was the fact that all those kids were afraid to come forward, that they were conditioned, and they had a lot on the line to come forward. So I think, you know, when it's hard to get, I think the fact that, you know, they just couldn't get enough people to testify, and because he is who he is, that like a jury of your peers, when you are a celebrity of that caliber, you have no peers.
Yeah. Which, as we found out, him having no peers like that was another way that he emotionally manipulated these children and the families, which brings us to number two in JP's points, that, at least in my opinion, and maybe, you know, so I watched this, the first part twice, and I have to say, upon second viewing, I really, like, the first time I watched it, I was kind of angry at, I know it was a different time then, but I was kind of angry, like, with the parents, like, really? Really? Like, he was still a grown up, and you actually, like, it's made so clear when you hear Wade say, like, you know, his grown man penis was in my 7-year-old mouth. And it's like, that's right, because he was 7 years old. You weren't leaving a 15-year-old with a 35-year-old or 33-year-old or a 30-year-old, however he was. Like, they were seven. Like, that's, you know, that's crazy. And then the second time I watched it, like, I listened more to, like, the parents, and I just, like, felt more sorry for them about how they were clearly women who, and men, the grandparents that were there, like, clearly they just, the mothers and the fathers were vulnerable themselves because they had other things going on, and that just goes, again, to show, like, what predators do is they find the weakest people and go for it. And I think that Fiona or Gabby agrees with me.
Yeah. Oh, Fiona's got a lot to say about this.
Mm-hmm. Yes. As the older cat, she has a lot of wisdom. No, I like my initial thought when watching this, and I'm sure we'll like get to, like, there's the Michael Jackson of it all. And then there's just like the overall, like, a question of abuse of it all. Mm-hmm. But in the Michael Jackson of it all portion of this, like, I was just sort of knocked on my ass in that, like, I had this realization of, like, we all knew this. Like, we all knew growing up, like, I sort of remember, like, hearing weird things about Neverland. And I remember hearing, you know, like, just like whispers about little boys that were, like, living there. And we all knew, but we just sort of, like, filtered it out in a way and just sort of forgot. And I think for me, the and I will say this is in part because of my age, our age, like, we were also children when this was happening. So didn't have the same perspective as we do now. Mm-hmm. But, I think for me then, like, growing up and even until, like, he died, there was, God, Fiona's being really loud.
That's okay. She's really angry.
Yep. She has a lot to say.
You know what, Fiona? Child rape makes me angry too. Uh-huh. Manipulation and predatorial behavior makes me angry, Fiona, so you let it out.
Yes.
Meow!
But, like, I think for me, that sort of, like, weirdness that we sort of all knew about Neverland, just in somewhere in my mind, got sort of mixed up with the general weirdness about Michael Jackson, which was, you know, the question of, like, the fact that he, like, changed skin colors and the fact that he, like, had all of this plastic surgery and, like, sort of that weirdness, and got kind of, like, glommed onto that, which, like, those are two very different things. Like, you can get all the plastic surgery that you want. Like, that's, you know, very much different from being a fucking sexual predator. But it was just amazing that it was like, oh yeah, this really did happen. And we kind of all knew about it. And we kind of just, like, didn't pay attention. So that was, like, the first thing that was like, holy shit. But then I do remember also, like, in, like, lodged in my brain somewhere were thoughts of, like, what the fuck is wrong with these parents? And you know, if you watch the Oprah special, like they both talk about how neither of them have really forgiven their parents. And like, I can completely understand why. And like, that's their thing. But I will say that watching the documentary did kind of, like JP said, like it kind of did make me empathize with them a lot more because you see like how they were groomed too. And still they're the adults in the situation, but right. that power differential of like this mega pop star
chose you.
Yeah.
So yeah. I believe, what did they say? Forgiveness is
it's not like a finish line that you cross. It's a road that you walk.
Thank you. It's a road that you take. That's the word. I took notes on it actually. Forgiveness is a road that you take. Which
I thought that was really beautiful.
That was really beautiful. And then one of the parents said the guilt of letting him down is still there. Well, clearly, duh. But it's just, I think, like, while the ultimate is, like, to the parents, like, why did you let him sleep there? But then I feel like that's also just another cop-out because at the end of the day, the blame is on the predator. Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I do think the parents have a part to play to protect their kids. Like, I don't want to leave them, what is the expression even? Completely off the hook. But I do think that, yes, like, it's, again, like, we very much have a tendency all the time to talk about what you could have done to avoid getting raped. Like, what, you know, you shouldn't have worn such a short skirt, etc. And that's kind of like a extension of that. Like, yeah, it's not the short skirt. It's the rapist who raped you, who chose to do that. It's Michael Jackson who chose to do these things.
Oh, and then to hit on what JP said about somebody in his circle, it's incredible to me that the people in Michael Jackson's circle who testified in court that they saw inappropriate things going on, then why the fuck didn't you stop and say something?
They're yes men. They're yes men. Like they, you know, it's like, and I can't remember who said it, but there really aren't stars like that anymore. Like I think just in this day and age, it's impossible to fathom someone that famous and with that much clout and adoration behind them.
Oprah actually said it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it becomes, and you know, again, not, I think as we've all clearly stated, by no means an excuse. It is all the more hard to stand up to and say no to someone that transcends just being a human. And I think because of that, he clearly surrounded himself with people that would only yes him. I'm sure if people said no, they probably weren't there the next day.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, I think you can also extend, like, that's for certain a huge factor. But like, we all live in a culture of rape, just like in general. And so, like, you know, look at Penn State, shout out Dan, look at the Catholic Church. Like, our priority as a culture is protecting the man. Like, our priority is not protecting the victims, you know, the children, the men or the women who are being victimized. That is not the priority. And so it's not super surprising. Then you add to that all of that power and fame and prestige. And like it's kind of like a perfect storm, like a recipe for disaster. Well, that even at a smaller level, like, you know, we see the same things.
Well, and I think it's also to, you know, kind of go back to what we sort of circled around before. I think there's probably a large part of the population that just didn't want it to be true.
They just love this guy
so much and could fold it into the weirdness of Michael Jackson and the fact that he never had a childhood and that's why he's so weird. And they couldn't let go of the fact that like who he was and what his music was to accept that this was also true taints everything.
I spoke to somebody last week before I watched this and she said, I watched Leaving Neverland, but I have to say, like, I don't know if I believe the accusers because why come out now after, you know, you testified that you didn't, like, why now? And just very convenient because Michael Jackson and the estate and the money and this and that. And I think a large part of it is that Amanda is correct. You don't want to believe that somebody that you idolize that gave you just so much joy could be that bad of a person. Because I'm not going to lie. It sucks that now, you know, I'm kind of sad because I loved the songs of his that came in my playlist that I played. And, you know, now I've got to take them out because I can't listen to them without, like, feeling like I want to puke. But I think that there's a lot of people out there that don't, that Amanda's right.
Yeah, no, I agree that people don't want it to be true. But like that type of comment of like, well, why would they only come forward now and blah, blah, blah. Again, like that's like 100% rape culture. And it's also like sort of surprising because in a society where like, I mean, the statistics, like, you know, you can look on like the RAIN website or whatever. I don't know what the actual statistics are, but it's like just an insane amount of people who are abused in general in life, but also like as children. It's pretty overwhelming. So, I mean, for me, like somebody saying that is that person themselves, like, it's just, you're kind of like showing that like, you don't really know what you're talking about. So like, maybe like you're a lucky person that wasn't abused as a child. And that's great. But like, you also then haven't really, I don't know, like have had any real empathy for people who have gone through that kind of thing to like look into it and understand why they might only be coming out about it now. And it just, I don't know, like it's disheartening because like we were saying, like with other examples of people in power and just like men in general, like, I mean, you just can't, like the whole time, like I couldn't help but think of like Brett Kavanaugh, who, again, it's not the same thing, but it's still terrible. And the people who don't want to believe that. Right. And so we have like the way that Dr. Blasey Ford is being treated right now is very similar to the way that these men are being treated, which is to say they're, you know, getting death threats and like all of this stuff. And meanwhile, people just want to be able to still go on and support, you know, like their judge who, you know, they might claim that like they believe the account of this person, but just everything except for the part about who actually was the perpetrator, right? Like that doesn't compute. And that's, so it's sort of disheartening because all of this stuff happened with Michael Jackson happened, you know, kind of like not a long time ago now, but like, you know, a while ago, and we're just seeing that like actually there hasn't really been any significant change. And so I just hope that people will watch it and kind of like come to understand things that maybe they don't want to look at because it's
hard. For what it's worth, I heard that Michael Jackson's estate actually provided calendars that had didn't rape Wade Robson.
Yeah, I hear he liked beer. Or I guess maybe it was wine.
It was wine.
It was wine. Yeah, I really like wine.
That argument always gets me. It's like, I defy anyone to watch that documentary and tell me that those men are made it all up.
Right.
There's no way.
Why? It is to the level of graphic. Uh-huh. Why would you make that up?
So here's the what I heard, the counterpoint, because I said, why would they make it up? And it was, well, I mean, they could have just read
silent.
They were there in court. They could have just read the court transcripts or heard the testimonies of the other people that sued him.
But again,
so they're just
like
repeating what they...
Right. Like even the best actor can't make themselves break out in hives on command.
Yeah. And like, to what end? To then like receive death threats? Like that's what you're doing when you come out about stuff like this.
Yep.
So that is the part where it's like anyone who says that is just kind of like themselves a hateful person who's contributing to rape culture and like maybe needs to take a step back and examine that. But like, yeah.
Yeah. Let's move on to the next email, which is Elena's, because I'm sure we're going to have a lot more to touch off after this. And Elena says, hey, ladies, I watched Leaving Neverland. It was sickening and incredibly frustrating. I just can't understand how blind the parents were to the abuse of a 10-year-old daughter, and I cannot imagine a scenario where it would make sense for her to share a bed with an adult night after night, even a family member. Do you think they just never imagined he would be as insane to do something with them in the same house? How could they ignore the allegations of the other boys and not put two and two together? Can you imagine being that hypnotized by fame that you could let something like this happen? Looking forward to your discussion. So let's, I guess, delve deeper into this. We touched upon it a little bit. So fame culture and letting them just share a bed even.
Well, and I think, Shandy, you pointed out on this already, you touched on this already, is the fact that, like, he wasn't just conditioning the children. He was conditioning the parents, yes, too. He made them feel special. He made them feel like
he gave this, them shopping
this, this, this celebrity that I admire reached out to me and thinks I'm an important and special person in their life. And that's,
yeah,
you know, like they were just as brainwashed in some respects.
And we've seen how today people can be brainwashed even. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, they said he spent hours on the phone with them. He bought one of them a house. He bought, you know.
Yeah.
Like he bought the parents off. But to say that he bought the parents off is also a crude way of characterizing the grooming. And it takes away really from just how predatorial.
Yeah. Right. It was psychological more than it was.
Well, totally financial. Psychological. And like, I don't want to let the parents off the hook completely because like they were the parents, they were the adult in the room. It was their job to,
yeah, you they know, should, protect they their children. Should have said, yeah.
But like,
yeah,
one of the things that, that I remember one of the moms saying, maybe both of them, I can't remember exactly. Was that Michael like came to feel like one of her sons. Mm-hmm. So it was very much, he inserted, yes, himself into their life in such a way that even though he was in his 30s, he felt like a child, like a son to them. And they talk about a lot about how, like, you know, he just played games and he was very, the way that he was described as being, again, like an adult child, like very just childish and sort of concerned with, like, you know, the same kinds of things that like a 10-year-old boy would be concerned with. And so in that regard, if you do really come to see this person through this process of grooming and everything, you come to see this person as your kid, I mean, you would never tell your older daughter that she can't share a bed with your younger daughter when they're having, like, you know, a fun sleepover or whatever. So there is a part of me that, again, I don't want to let them off the hook, but like, there's a part of me that's like, that's maybe like a part of what's going on here, you know?
Yeah.
I understand. Well,
and I feel like a lot of, particularly the first part, maybe not so much in the second part, but I feel like I made the mental note several times. It's like those mothers, it felt like they were making a different documentary.
Yes.
That some of the things that they were saying, it's like, do they know what we're talking about?
Yes. Didn't he say in the Oprah special, Dan Reed, the director, that he filmed Wade and James over the course of, or like 2 days each or whatever, where they did their thing.
Yeah.
So he must have brought in the mothers later and talked to them. And, you know, they must have just given their side of the story without...
Right.
Yeah, and, but it's like, you hear there's still such like adoration in their voices in a lot of ways. Like, I think they still haven't really grasped what actually happened.
Well, right. And so I think like you can see like with even with the guys, the way that the documentary starts out is very much in that same vein of the adoration and all of these things, even throughout almost all of the first document, like the first part, or yeah, like a considerable part of it. And then, of course, like, their tone changes because they experience all of these things firsthand. And so I think that because the mothers didn't experience those things firsthand in the same way, and like you said, they're still sort of grappling with it, then I think that's why we don't get as much. But it's like you can see that same sort of adoration, admiration right, in them. And it just, and I think that the director really did take all parties involved, like, sort of through that, like from beginning to end. And so right, in the beginning, of course, it's going to be more of the good things. It's just that for the mothers, it was the good things for much, much longer, because they didn't know for many more years, they didn't right, know that any of the other stuff was happening. So they have like this longer trajectory of time where everything was just great and Michael was great, etc. And then less of a time where they
right,
knew any of the bad stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have another email from Mike.
Okay, so Mike writes in, "Hello, broadcasters. I watched the 2 episodes of Leaving Neverland when they aired, and it is an incredibly intense viewing experience. The most difficult part was probably the last half of the second episode, seeing the harsh effects the abuse had long after it ended. It was extremely difficult to understand how these parents ignored so many warning signs, but they are not alone. We've seen it over and over with the Catholic Church and many other groups where parents just get groomed or have willful ignorance, causing them to turn a blind eye. Hopefully, the more we have light shed on these crimes, the more easily people can recognize the signs of abuse and grooming. It's certainly a hard but worthwhile watch, Michael.
I agree with that.
I agree. Yeah.
You know, learn, because I believe that at the time this was all happening, it probably wasn't as mainstream, right? Looking for these signs of abuse and you know, correct us if we're wrong, or me if I'm wrong. I was in college in what the second trial was when we were in college, right? 2004? Was that when it was?
I thought it was 2000.
2003 maybe? Because I believe that when I saw it on the screen, I was like, oh, I was in college then. Why don't I remember?
Huh.
I remember, but it was like this like revisionist history that by the time like Michael Jackson was making his comeback, like right before he died, it's like we had all but forgotten. Right, about that was also blip.
Another what, like 6 or 7 years later.
Exactly. It was long enough time that like the, you know, jury of public opinion had forgotten about it.
Right. So I just Googled it, and People versus Jackson was 2004 to 2005.
Okay.
Ah, see, never go up against the girl with her dates.
The dates are the one thing I have, okay?
Yeah, you're always going to be right. I shouldn't have challenged.
Yeah, so the first one was 1993, so we were officially too young. So that was like
grade. We were nine.
Yeah. And then for me personally, honestly, 2004, 2005, I was in France. I was not like, I didn't have a TV or a computer, so I was not paying attention to anything that was happening in the United States. Basically, like, it was the Bush years. I was not paying attention.
And I think we were, I mean, we were in college, so we were probably just doing college things, to be honest.
I do remember it.
Paying attention to it. Like, I knew it was happening.
Yeah.
Do we have any more emails on this?
No, I think, that's it.
I think what really stood out to me about watching the whole documentary was, it wasn't so much the child sexual abuse stuff, because again, we had all heard those rumors and kind of, you know, in the back of my mind peripherally knew that that was a thing without even really processing it. So like when I was watching it, I it was like kind of like when you're spoiled on like a movie or a book, like I knew that that was coming. What really got to me was, again, the grooming, the psychological part of the whole thing. To me, what really horrified and fascinated me at the same time was the psychology behind everything. Like the type of people that were preyed on, the grooming, the complicated nature between love, in quotes, and abuse. When James said that he'll be working on this for the rest of his life, and then, you know, just certain quotes or as they talked about in the Oprah special, like him crying in the corner, like just the manipulation really got me. And other quotes, just to like kind of finish up, where like James was like, he said I was his first sexual experience, and he would say that all the time. He's the biggest entertainer and a creative genius, and that creative genius thinks that you're special. What's not to like, right? And then, you know, contrast that with Wade is then saying, you know, there was nothing aggressive about it, nothing abrasive. I never felt scared or anything like that. It just didn't feel that strange. Michael told me this is how we show our love. And I liked the feeling that it was making him happy, that it was pleasing him. And all of those things are really hard to re-say and hard to listen to. But at the same time, I think that that goes with, like Mike was just saying in his email, it's really important to recognize that kind of stuff. Because awareness, right? Not the if you see something, say something, but like if you think something is wrong.
Well, and it's recontextualizing what we think of as abuse. Like we think of abuse, and it has to be painful or hurtful or violent. And this wasn't any of those things at the time. Like these kids didn't have the language, the understanding, the whatever to get that what was happening was wrong, because it actually felt good and they felt special. And it's like, how do you square those things that like, no, that's actually abuse.
Right. He's mm-hmm. making you feel special so he can keep using you. Mm-hmm. And I've done a lot of thinking about this. And I do think it's possible for somebody who is abusing you to have a fondness for you or an affection for you or care about you on some level, or where they don't want you to be like, you know, to die or hurt or something. Like they would cry if you died. But at the end of the day, it comes down to if they are still abusing you in whatever way they are doing it, whether it is physically or emotionally or psychologically or sexually, if they're still abusing you, that's not love.
Right.
No. No, it is not.
Like, that's not love. That's not getting into a fight with somebody that you're, you know, dating or married to or in your family and then having a slip of the tongue and being like, oh, fuck, I shouldn't have said that. I'm so sorry. I love you. That's not that. That this is like genuinely going after, preying upon you for something that makes them feel superior over you or dominance over you or better than you or asserting some kind of whatever over you for their own self. Like, that's what that is. And they might care about you and they might think that they love you and they might love you in a way that, you know, they don't want you out of their life. But again, it's not real. It's not real because you know what I'm trying to say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't want to go down like the wrong path here if I have interpreted it wrong, but the way that I have interpreted, I've done a lot of thinking about this and, you know, just, I don't know, the psychology behind those who prey upon people who are weaker than them has really been on my mind a lot over the last 2 weeks since I watched this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think like what kind of stood out to me too. I mean, again, I mentioned Kavanaugh, it's just the importance of believing victims, and allowing them to come forward in order to like start their process of healing, but then also to hold people accountable and maybe not make them a Supreme Court justice, et cetera. Just, you know, just as an example, but, because like, the cycle needs to be broken and like these people are broken, and that's kind of what they talked about. So they talked about a lot how what really kind of changed things for them was when they had kids of their own and then being able to see like those kids approaching the age at which they were abused and how that was really, you know, kind of a shock to the system. But I also don't think that it's a coincidence that they happen to be kind of in their 30s-ish, I'm assuming. I mean, I think like these things that happen to you when you're a child, you don't process them right away. You think you're fine. You blow through your 20s. And I know that like as a 30 something, I've done a lot of thinking back, reflection. And you see how things that happen to you when you were a kid have a lasting effect on your life.
Yeah.
And like, mm-hmm. and pop up in these places that you wouldn't even expect. And so if you, and like, I'm lucky in that I was always believed and that was never a problem, but like, I can't even imagine, you know, how do you even begin to heal if you have the world against you and you see your abuser, rewarded, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was, for me, that was like my big takeaway was just sort of like, we were talking about, there's the Michael of it all. And then there's the, just like the greater question of abuse and just sort of like engaging with that part of it, I think, to see. And I think they did a really good job of also separating the two, because both things are present, but like Michael Jackson didn't happen in a vacuum. Like, it's part of a greater cultural apparatus. And
yeah,
we need to talk about it and be able to confront these things if that cycle is going to be broken. But again, like, we have to also as a society hold people accountable.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do.
And that's tough, especially if the abuser is an idol or a family member or something. Like, it's tough.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that all the thoughts that I had over the last 2 weeks, I could articulate them better. I hope that Leaving Neverland opens a greater dialogue in the world about the complicated truth behind abusive relationships of all sorts.
Mm-hmm.
And I do say complicated truth because I believe it was James or Wade, one of them, or maybe Oprah, one of them said it in the special. And I was like, wow, that's a great way of putting it.
Yeah. Where do we go from here?
Let's take our ad break / pee break.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Where do we go from here? We go to an ad break.
We go to, yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, and we're back. And we just all looked at our clocks and the time and realized that it's getting a little bit late. So we are going to move right along and see what else we get to over the next couple of minutes. So I think we are going to kick off our post Leaving Neverland with some That's What She Said.
All right. So it's going, chugging right along. It's Tuesday.
I don't know if either of you saw it.
Seems like the wood ones are giving you trouble.
Not everything is out yet.
It came out in 2004 because it definitely was the thing that came up when I was researching.
Wow. Oh my God. It's like I just said that like 5 minutes ago. they all kind of blend together.
Your body got too much and wants more.
I am really excited to see it.
It is amazing what the body is capable of and how much you can come back.
You just gotta bring it home now.
There's three of them. We've done two.
I don't really do a ton either.
This is going off really, really well.
I want to have both.
It doesn't make me nauseous. It just makes me... Okay, that was a total coincidence, by the way.
Too thin? It's thick and creamy.
I'm just doing this for Matt.
I was finished with it on Thursday night.
I can stay awake for 15 more minutes. Let's do this.
And then he wanted more.
Look what you started.
Maybe we'll have to do a round two.
Take a breath. Don't rush back into it.
I was going to try to watch that.
Every time it pops up, it gives me joy.
That's a good one.
I feel like the last few were kind of like a short story.
Yeah, they all kind of worked well together. Yeah.
Butter shemales. all right. So we have a lot of emails this week and voicemails. For the sake of time, we're not going to be able to get to all of them right now, but let's see what we can do. Our first email is from Mr. David Gott.
All right. Dear Amanda, Shandy, and Colleen.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Sound excited.
Sorry. I was just on mute because I was eating some dinner.
I'm sorry.
So I quickly unmuted. No. It's all good. I mean, I shouldn't be eating during the podcast, although that is kind of one of our traits.
Yeah.
Okay. So Gott writes in, honorary broads. Dear Amanda, Shandy, and Colleen. I was shocked and just a tad surprised by Michael's reaction to my concerns about his slightly unseemingly honorary broad status campaign. On hearing his argument, my first thought was, how could I have missed something so obvious? If honorary broad status was in fact making a person an honorary female, well, then I would just be totally wrong. In my head, the universe was turned upside down. Dogs were hanging out with cats. Dennis was winning at Cards Against Humanity.
Ooh, sick burn.
Oh my God.
I must say that his attempt to redirect the discussion was exceptionally clever. I guess it is a normal reaction for men to obfuscate the issue when they are called out for their male privilege. I have probably done so myself a time or two.
Oh, shit, son.
So, I decided to do my research. please turn your attention to the broadcast episode 3.8, the 98th installment. This episode is entitled The Inclusive Cool Kids Table.
That's a great
time. At 1 hour, 21 minutes, and 45 seconds in that episode, Shandy said that the three of you were like hanging out at the cool kids table, which Amanda then said it was the inclusive cool kids table. Perhaps play a short clip from the episode?
Well, your wish is my command.
It's true.
Yeah. We're the ones that you walk into and you think we're lame, but we're not lame because we're actually super funny.
Who thinks we're lame?
I would say we're actually kind of like the people sitting at the cool kids table. And the other people walk in and they like want to sit at the cool kids table. That's how I conceptualize us anyway.
Okay, well, I have never conceptualized myself in the cool kids table ever in my life. And Amanda. Yeah,
okay. Ever sat at the cool kids table. This is great. This is a new experience for me.
Woo!
Yeah.
The cool kids table, episode title. The cool kids table.
Yes.
Welcome.
But we're an inclusive cool kids table.
Oh, totally.
Like, we leave plenty of room.
Uh-huh.
We don't, like, stick our feet out and trip anyone as they walk by.
Okay. Yes. But seriously, like, think of it. Like, Jay tries to, you know, make his way on the podcast from time to time. Matt's practically a broadcaster.
I mean, yeah. Matt's a fourth broad.
Yep.
Everyone, I gotta say.
Well, no, it's Jay's the fourth broad. Matt's the fifth broad.
But
we'll
yeah, we have
we'll
Matt.
Work out the hierarchy. Later.
Well, no, Matt has to be the fifth broad because he's also the 5th of May, so he's got to be the 5th of broad.
I feel like that should come with like a crest. Like,
oh my god! Okay, maybe Jacob can make Matt a pin that says the 5th of broad.
Oh my god, I love it.
Okay, speaking of, we really need Jacob on making Matt a pin that says the 5th of broad.
Yeah, that was a great idea.
Uh-huh. Wow. That was lovely.
That was great.
All right. Gott goes on to say that after some back and forth, Shandy talked about how many people wanted to hang out with the broadcasters. She then said Matt was practically the fourth broadcaster, yada, yada, yada. Jay was named the fourth broadcaster and Matt the fifth of broad. Some episode later, Brian was named the sixth broad. This numbering infers that Shandy, Colleen, and Amanda were the first three. I believe that confirms my thoughts that honorary broad status was, in fact, an honorary broadcaster, thus rendering Michael's clever counter-argument both silly and moot. There is only one possible flaw in my logic. Neither I nor Michael make the rules, so we must now leave it to the three of you to decide if there should be female honorary broads. Amanda said last week that broad is not an identifier, but rather a state of mind. Seems just about perfect to me. So until this is all resolved in Raleigh, your chess move, Mike. Sincerely, Gott.
Oh, sir.
You know, when it comes to men playing games, I'm okay with it when it's like this and it benefits us.
Yep.
Yep.
And we don't even have to pronounce ourselves on the issue because I really want to see what Mike's going to say next week.
I know, right?
Yeah, I'm just enjoying this very intelligently worded discourse.
Mm-hmm. I know. And as Gott pointed out, reminder, the broads are going to conference and we will figure it out and give our decision during our live show in May.
Definitely.
Yes.
I do think the big takeaway from this, though, is to reference back to Gott's email, we really are the cool kids table and everyone just wants to hang out with us.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Yeah. I feel very validated and vindicated and all the good feelings.
Good times. I'm very excited to see where this goes next.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we all just looked at the time, and it's just about midnight. We're going to put a pin in the feedback for right now and continue it next week. Also, next week we're going to have a discussion on Russian Doll. We won't be recording the following week since Shandy will be on spring break. Spring break! Yeah!
Mm-hmm.
So next week, we will have plenty of time for Russian Doll. We'll have plenty of time for all of our feedback that we've got saved up. and more peacocking emails. So it's going to be it's going to be a wonderful end of March / beginning of April. But on that note, if you are a patron, thank you so much for supporting us. We really appreciate it. If you'd like to become a patron, you can go to patreon.com/jandjack, or you can go to jandjack.com, click on the Become a Patron link on the top corner. Thank you, though, for listening in general, whether you are a patron or not. I feel like we don't thank the listeners enough, but we do really appreciate it. Like, every week we get new emails. We've never had a week without feedback. And not to get sentimental or anything, I really consider myself to be incredibly lucky to get to podcast with two amazing women every week and have amazing people that listen and send feedback. Like, no matter what happens in life, like, this has been a wonderful, and we talked about this, you know, earlier, this has been a wonderful, like, anchor for me, and I appreciate each and every single one of you, so thank you.
Here. Well said. Mm-hmm.
If you like to shop through the Amazon affiliates link, you can go to janejack.com/Amazon, all lowercase letters. If you want to hit up the store, get your Team Science Student Universe mug, your broadcast sticker. If you wanted to check us out on Instagram, if you go to Instagram, we are at the Broadcasters 3, and I think our Instagram is super fun. Like, I look forward to it, and really the highest praise that we can get right now is that Jay actually really looks forward to our Instagram post. And
nice.
Yeah. Oh, you can email us thebroadcaster3@gmail.com. I think that's about it. A special thank you to the patrons that support us at a certain level, and that would be The Drake, Ed the Creepy Mailman, Tack from Tokyo, Eckhart Rigner, Maggie the Magnificent, and Joanne with a Plan. Thank you all very much. Again, if you'd like to support us, you can go to patreon.com/jandjack. That's all I have right now. Stay tuned next week for me coming off of being on anesthesia for a little while. It's going to be great. Anybody else have anything?
Nope.
All right, cool. Well, on that note, thanks everybody for joining us. My name is Colleen.
My name is Amanda.
And I'm Shandy.
Peace out, everybody. Have a great week.
Goodbye.
Bye.